Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air. With live Premier League action all this month on the Air Sport Pack.
All right, it's a very special Wednesday Night Rugby tonight. I'm delighted to say we've got Gavin Comiskey, the Irish Times, with us in studio. But Tom English is on the line from Scotland, where apparently the Scots are very unhappy with the fact that Jamie Heaslip had the temerity to say that this isn't a bad draw.
Listen, it's a bit of a pantomime response now, to be honest. It's a bit of a Twitter response. I think Jamie Heaslip was apparently punching the air on the draw. They've taken it as a slight put down of Scotland. There is a narrative here in being serious that a lot of people in Scotland, certainly Vern Cotter, thought that when he was in the job, and his attack coach Jason O'Halloran thought it, that after Scotland had beaten Ireland, that Ireland didn't give Scotland due credit, that Ireland seemed to be putting the wind down to the fact that Ireland blew it, and Scotland should never have won. So that has rankled. It hasn't really come out that much in public, but privately some of the players will say Ireland never gave Scotland any credit for that win. So maybe that's where it's coming from there amongst the supporters.
It was the bus's fault, though, wasn't it?
Twice.
It was the bus. I mean, you can't win a test match when your bus doesn't turn up, you know?
This is it.
And the traffic cops had obviously laid a conspiracy down to make sure that Ireland went down the wrong road. Wasn't that the other issue?
Well, that was the other issue. But this became hilarious the week after that, because somebody within the Scottish Rugby Union, who shall remain nameless, told me exactly what time the call was made to the Ireland team hotel and exactly what time that bus pulled out of the car park of the team hotel. And it wasn't, they said, as Ireland had portrayed it. They said that they left the hotel about 6-7 minutes late. And it's all this big narrative. It became hilarious. But the SRU also said privately that they had told Ireland at the team planning meeting that they should allow, I think, 15 or 20 minutes to get to the stadium. Ireland said they could do it in 10 or 15, one of those. So Ireland, they put the blame for the lateness of the bus purely on Ireland. So that's all bubbling away in the background.
We can keep this story alive forever, Tom. We've got to bring it up on the eve of the game next season as well.
Oh, listen, we will. That and many other things.
Well, you get to go back to Murrayfield, and that's 2 years down the line. So it's definitely going to be a story at that point. And then we're practically on the doorstep of the World Cup. So, I mean,
yes.
You're joking here about it, Gavin, but I guarantee.
Oh, no, I will. I definitely will.
But
seriously, I'm not, like, whatever Jamie did, like, it was no big deal. It was storming the teacup on the day that's in it. But what is a big deal for Ireland is that they avoided, like, how attritional have the Welsh games been in the last few years?
Mm.
And the whole point about this draw, why it's so sweet for Ireland, is what stopped them in 2015, what stopped Ireland many, many times, has been the attritional nature of the pool matches. So when they get to the quarter final, like, they were in ribbons. Everyone knows that's what happened in 2015. The Welsh game and the French will break them up a bit. So you've got to play the Springboks in a quarter final. And if you're not going with very close to your full metal jacket, they don't have a chance. It's the way Irish rugby's always been. There'll be more depth by then and all that. But that's the key thing about this draw. Japan and Scotland won't take too much out of them in comparison. There'll be a Tongan game probably. There could be the most attritional match they play in the group stage.
Yes. That's the playoff winner is going to be Fiji, Samoa, or Tonga. Tonga, as the weakest of those three, are the ones who get in.
They're third at the moment in the Oceania qualifying, so they'll play off in a playoff against a poor European team. So almost certainly, at the moment, unless Tonga go and beat Samoa and Fiji next year.
But Tom, there must be a sense that Scottish rugby has improved beyond recognition in the last 18 months and that they're on the right curve at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, they would just, Ireland, rightly, Gavin's right, that they will see that as a good draw, and Scotland will see it as a good draw as well, because they've avoided New Zealand and England. And they have a new coach now in Gregor Townsend, brand new coaching setup. Management team is completely different. Vern Cotter has done a fine job. That was the best Six Nations campaign that they had in 10 years. So they have a bit of momentum at long last. I mean, you know, it's in the professional era. I mean, you literally have to go back to the start of the professional era. And maybe there's a couple of seasons before this season where Scotland thought, yeah, you know what, we're on the right track here. They've absolutely had precious little to get their teeth into in terms of professional rugby in this country for knocking on for 20 years. And now, at last, they think they're onto something. I mean, I still, you know, be slightly hesitant to say that they're going to kick on from here and that they can become a force in the Six Nations, because the depth is still not there. And if you look at even missing just three Lions for the Lions tour, that squad going to Singapore to play Italy and Sydney to play Australia and then Suva to play Fiji. There's no young players. There's very few young players in there. There's not that much coming through from Scotland. So I think what you see at the moment is what you're going to get in a couple of years' time. That's a worry for Gregor Townsend. So they are improving, without question. But you look at the conveyor belt of talent that's coming through in Ireland. That does not exist in Scotland.
So is this current team a bit of a fluke then?
No. I think it's a good side. I think it's a good side. It's maturing. It has been very, very well coached. It's getting more confident. It's getting harder, physically harder. But if you take out, as you did during the Six Nations, Dickinson and Nell, their two first-choice props, Scotland really, really struggled in the scrum from start to finish in that Six Nations. And so the depth up front, it's paper thin. It's paper thin. If they lose two or three or four guys through injury, watch out, because anybody could catch them in anything.
And Tom, as well, for all the progress they made this year, the pummeling they took at Twickenham killed off any 50-50s. Yeah. The Greys lost out on the Lions. Anyone who was close to the Lions lost it that day. They were just... Yeah. All their progress went backwards because their defence was a disgrace. They got ran over. They made Joseph look like the best centre in the world. Mm. They definitely got him on the plane that day. So they got a lot of English guys on the plane that day, the Scots.
No question. Joseph, I'm not sure Joseph was going to New Zealand until that day. And it was weird because the Scotland midfield defence had been pretty good up to that. Certainly none of us over here thought it was a weakness, but it was Hugh Jones and Alex Dunbar were utterly ripped asunder. Yeah. Now, definitely Scotland had a freakish run of injuries that day. They had three or four guys concussed. I mean, the same in France. They had three concussions in France. So the two games that they lost seven guys through concussion. So you factored that in. But certainly the England game did horrendous damage to Scotland's representation on the Lions Tour. Gray went south. Both Greys went south that day. A lot of others. Finn Russell lost the plot that day. It was a pretty horrific day. Scotland going to Twickenham normally ends in an unmitigated disaster since 1983, the last time they won there.
So the current team being good is a triumph of coaching as opposed to any kind of academy or nursery system.
Ah, there's brilliant. There is quality players come through. Their best centre, they found him, and he ended up having to go to South Africa, I suppose, for him to find them as well. But
Hugh Jones is coming. He's a very, very good footballer. They were also missing, you know, you got a factor in, they were missing Duncan Taylor as well. Saracen's fine centre has been blighted by injury. Dickinson and Nell were big losses as well. But the academy system, it's stretched to call it an academy system.
Yeah, their Lions winger, Tom, he was played under 19 for Ireland, didn't he? He came through Ulster, so
Tommy Seymour, exactly. Mm. Exactly. And he was cast aside by Ulster and he was picked up almost as an afterthought by
quality player
by Glasgow, and really Gregor Townsend really did a magnificent job on him. So there is very, very little coming through. There was mutterings of excitement about Hoyland, the winger from Edinburgh, and about Kinghorn, the fullback from Edinburgh. Hoyland is on this summer tour. Kinghorn isn't. They're miles away. They're miles away. And there's a flying machine fullback under 20 player, Darcy Graham, flying machine.
Like Stuart Hogg was, basically.
Yeah. I mean, they have huge hopes for him. But you could easily count on the fingers of one hand. You wouldn't need all five fingers to talk about, to mention all of the young players that are exciting Scottish rugby fans at the moment.
We were obsessed with getting Ireland into the top seeding, and ultimately that obsession has proved to be right. Like, this is exactly the group that you would have picked if you could have hand-delivered a group.
And it was very funny, if you listen to Eddie Jones today, that's exactly the group he wanted, because he thinks it's important to... I just love the way Eddie Jones spins everything. But no, the top seeding thing really, really paid off today, because this is... I think I said this 2 years ago anyway, but I'll say it again. This is the real chance to get to a World Cup semi-final. It's really on here now.
Dogs go there.
But like, if they don't beat, Japan will probably be the opening ceremony game. A Joe Schmidt team doesn't lose to a Japan team, I don't think.
Against us?
I think so. Yeah. I think it gets confirmed in September, but it's teed up to be Ireland-Japan in the opening match of the tournament.
Right.
Which is brilliant in itself. There's a lot of value for Ireland to get out of that. To lose to Scotland at a World Cup in a pool game, even if the Scottish team gets to its full potential in 2 years, Ireland would still be a massive disappointment for the Smith era not to deliver in a World Cup.
I think if Ireland are playing Japan first up, Ireland could potentially have a problem. You saw what Japan did against South Africa first up in England. The emotion of that game, home crowd. I was in Japan last summer with Scotland. They have got a lot of young players coming through. Maybe the results don't reflect that. But I think in 2 years' time, Japan are going to be a danger to Ireland, certainly a danger to Scotland.
There's plenty of lessons to be learnt now in June. But just from watching the Japan team recently, you don't get much from it. And Jamie Joseph has come in and Tony Brown's coming in, who Leinster were trying to get. And the coaching is as good as you can get. Like, Joseph won the Super Rugby with the Highlanders. But the Sunwolves are a very good indication. Now, Joe today turned around and went, he was asked about Japanese rugby, and he goes, yeah, the Sunwolves beat the Bulls, who've been a disgrace to South African rugby this season. And if you look, they've lost every single other game. So they've won 1 out of 10. But they were very competitive against Cheetahs, against Chiefs, against some of the best teams in Super Rugby. So there is clear progress on quality of player, but still, I don't think.
Oh, no, listen,
like, it's teed up. It could happen.
You'd make Ireland overwhelming favourites. But I think it's a potential banana skin. I mean, if you're betting your last fiver, you'd bet it on Ireland. But I think Japan. I think Japan are going to cause some problems. I think Scotland will be slightly worried because Scotland went over to Japan last summer pretty much with a full squad and played poorly in the first match and were outplayed in the second match and scraped home. They had to bring Laidlaw and a few others off the bench to see out the match. Japan definitely deserved to beat them in the second test. And this is a pretty much full-strength Scotland side against an understrength Japan side. They had four or five players missing. So, you know, they had, I think, six or seven of their starting lineup that day had about three or four caps. So young side. I think they've got some decent players coming through. Whether they can get it all together in 2 years' time, that'll be a fascinating proposition, Japan in front of their own fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And suddenly this June tour to Japan is like very important for all sorts of, like, just to see where you're going to be staying, to acclimatise yourself.
Well, Joe's few days in Japan now, you know what he's at. Like, he's
playing football with the
He was, but you know, he's checking everything out. You can be sure of that. This is actually the way it's put there. And Steve Hansen said it today. He goes, "Wouldn't it be amazing?" The implication was that Ireland will top the pool, Scotland will come third, and he goes, "Wouldn't it be amazing to play the host nation in the quarter final for the first time? That'd be a great thing for the All Blacks." So, yeah, Scotland are getting kind of swatted aside already, which
not great. Yeah, I mean the Scots, and you know, I mean we're great nation to have a chip on the shoulder, and it suits them to have it there. They want to have a chip there, and all of this stuff about, you know, Ireland not giving Scotland due credit, Wales not giving Scotland due credit for the victory in Murrayfield, that all feeds into the Scottish psyche perfectly.
I don't like the way that conversation has gone here from us, like, yay,
Ireland definitely should have won in Murrayfield, though.
Japan are going to beat us, Scotland are going to be chippy against us, and they'll have 2 years of hurt to unleash on the fields of Japan.
I genuinely don't see a problem. Like, it's 2 years away, who knows, but I don't see a problem with Ireland topping the pool. I think the Springboks, the fear there would be that they'll have their act together. And Rossi Erasmus' contract will be up in Munster. He could be back in the Springbok system for all we know. He could be back in his old role. There's no reason why they'll have their act together within 2 years. They're already clearly trying because they're getting Brendan Venter and the likes back in.
Yeah.
There's still a massive player drain, but if the Springboks the Springboks in a World Cup quarter final, they'll always feel they can put together a team. They did. They almost beat the All Blacks after getting beaten by Japan 2 years ago. So they'll always feel they can put together a team to put Ireland to the sword.
One of the other big stories out today was obviously the change in the residency rule, and it seemed like the Irish and, I don't know, in the face of it, Scotland seemed to have benefited from this over the years as well. Was there a sense that Scotland was being targeted in the way that, I guess, the IRFU apparently had been lobbying for the rule to be kept the way it was?
I think Scotland's official line on all of this is that they will go along with with what everyone else thinks, but that they're not going to campaign for a 5-year rule out on their own. They have benefited from it, you know, Visser, Nell, Strauss, the main ones, Dupree. This is one of the areas where the rule really it's a shambles. Cornel Dupree, okay, he plays for Edinburgh. He's got a couple of caps for Scotland in the Six Nations, just gone. He is such an average back row forward. And looked disinterested. Has looked disinterested since he won his caps for Edinburgh. And I think, how in the name of God is that guy getting international caps for Scotland? He's been in the country 3 years. And it suits Scotland, you know. It's not just the guys who have actually gone on and been capped under the residency rule. It's all the other guys in Scotland and Ireland and loads of other countries have brought into the country in the hope that they'd be good enough to qualify for the residency rule. I mean, Scotland brought in Takeli Nair of Aru a couple of seasons ago, a Fijian, a big tank on the wing. Purely because they thought he was good enough to play for Scotland, stick him in there for 3 years, and he left after a year. Australia picked him up, capped him a couple of times, and then binned him. So Fiji can't touch him. And the latest one is Ollie Kebble, the prop, coming into Glasgow next season. Another one, residency rule. But I mean, France have been as guilty as anybody in doing this.
Is Josh Strauss leaving now after getting...
He is, yeah.
That's the major problem. That doesn't happen with Irish rugby, where the guy comes in and kind of puts in a bit of time with Jarre Payne, CJ Stand or whatever. Strauss came in and looked like he was going to be... He's a key figure for Glasgow, key figure for Scotland, it looks like he was becoming. And now he's... Was it Saracens? Or he's going for money anyway, staying in England.
He's going for money. I'm not sure his contract was going to be renewed at Glasgow. I think that's part of it. He is a bit inconsistent. He had a couple of good games in the Six Nations. Before that, he was pretty poor, but he did start off certainly when he was trying to qualify or leading up to the deadline for the residency rule. He was very effective, very very effective. But since then, he hasn't been that effective. Funny that.
Motivation matters. Apparently,
it's funny.
I think I think there is something in that. You know, I've seen that in other players as well. Certainly in Scotland, when you know they're shooting the lights out leading up to the residency rule, and then they get in the door and they get the jersey on the back, and all of a sudden the hunger isn't there the same way. I would take WP Nell out of that. He's been brilliant, okay, residency rule for sure, but he's been a fantastic player for Scotland. But I think a good number, it'd be an interesting experiment actually to see how many guys kicked on under the residency rule.
Yeah, Jarre Payne hasn't been great for Ulster. I think it's like 17 games in 2 seasons because of injuries playing for Ireland. Obviously, he's been excellent for Ireland. But an interesting thing talking to the people from World Rugby about this was, this is about a year ago, but I don't think the penny had dropped that if you drop it back to 5 years, which has its merits and it's going to happen now, it's been pushed through since the grumblings of 3 years started, it just means that the bigger nations are just going to go lower and younger to recruit from Pacific Islands, whatever they get. It just means they go, oh, okay, we'll just change our policy and go down. Okay, we've got to get them into our secondary school systems now, as opposed to getting them in when they're 19, 20. So instead of going after under-20s quality players or whatever, just go younger and younger and younger. I don't think it's going to stop. It'd be very interesting to see what happens now after this comes in, if that's the process.
Absolutely. And it could become even more cynical.
They had their chance to wipe it and to go to remove it, and there was no appetite for that one. This was just kind of there was a public kind of an outcry, and they went, well, let's quieten this down, and that's what they've done.
When you say remove it, as in it's illegal to play for a country that's not the country of your birth,
that solves it.
Yeah
they didn't do that, didn't even consider that, I don't think.
Is there any, like, it's really hard to make a devil's advocate argument here, is there any point of restrictive trade where this is your profession and ultimately the peak of your profession is denied to you because of an accident of your birth?
Well, Pichet, when he was arguing it about what it should be done, he was like, you don't see any Argentinian players doing this. This is the way Argentinian players in our country. So he was advocating that you play for your country where you're from and all that. And a way of protecting the international game being, supposedly, it's the thing that drives Irish rugby for starters, the way of stopping the influx of players into European rugby would have been to stop this rule. Because some guys won't leave South Africa to come up to Europe, so they'll stay because they want to play for the Springboks, because they know there's not an option to play for Ireland. So they'll know they'll have to stay, keep ploughing away if they want to ever play international rugby. Because a lot of these guys, Stander and whatnot, they've come up here and paying because they weren't good enough Springboks or All Blacks, but they knew if they got here, they can play international rugby. Granted, they can make a lot more money, but they can also play international rugby. It was part of the rules. You take that away and it might slow, might stop the tide coming up.
I mean, you could have fixed this, and no one was going to go for this, but do away residency and just say, right, one of your parents or grandparents has to have been born in the country that you want to play for. You bring that in, you have a different landscape completely. Different. Now, that is the nuclear option. You're one parent. You have to have had a parent who was born in Ireland if you want to play for Ireland. That was mooted. I put that to the Scottish Rugby Union, and they almost fell off their chair because they privately, they wanted 3 years, but they didn't want to be seen to be wanting 3 years because that's not cool.
Yeah,
that's not sending out the right message to their young players.
The Irish, you've changed their policy now, and Kevin Maggs has got hired there. They're going to go deeper into the exile system in England. They're going to hunt for players with Irish backgrounds in England and try and strengthen up the exile policy. That's what they've been talking about this week.
Okay.
They have a new supporter came out with that.
The Scottish Rugby Union a couple of years ago employed an international settlement advisor. This guy's job was to go out to the Southern Hemisphere and find players.
I've no doubt Ireland are doing that as well.
Yeah. But have they done it as an official job? You know, as an international... I mean, they advertised for this job.
Who did he get?
Job description.
Who did he find?
I think various people.
It has no impact on Todd Blendall or Bundiaki, that the door is going to be fine for them.
It was a busy day today, so I didn't get through the fine print on it, but I'd be interested to know if like someone like James Lowe, who's an outstanding winger from New Zealand, if he can slip under the radar and get in 3 years' time. Because it was December 2020, it comes into full force. I'm not sure about the guys who are coming in the next year or two, if they can get in under the radar.
Yeah, so
3 years as opposed to 5 years. Just a busy day, lots to sift through.
Yeah. And a party tonight to go to as well.
Yeah, the rugby players. Yeah.
He's in his monkey suit here. It's a moment of...
Jesus, he's a fine looking man.
I forgot my cufflinks, actually.
Tom, great to have you with us. Thanks a million.
A pleasure.
Tom English of BBC Scotland there, and Gavin Cumsky of the Irish Times. Is there anything in particular tonight that's going to happen? It's like... best Irish player of the year
I nearly said the winners there, but it's embargo till 11:30 tonight. There's plenty of awards. There's an interesting Hall of Fame guy coming in. There was the Irish Times sponsored a table, and they have like a supporters player of the year as well.
Yeah.
So that's a separate, there's two separate winners of the player of the year. The players player of the year is an interesting one because it was so competitive this year, you know.
Yeah.
Like it was Murray, Henshaw, Stander won it last year, was back up again, Tyke Furlong, they're all up. It was like it's interesting to see how the players actually voted for the man they chose, because we're not going to get the voting, but I'd say it was pretty tight.
Yeah. Last point about the Rugby World Cup draw, we avoid the All Blacks if we win our group all the way into the final, so that's why there's this sense that it's now or never.
Yeah.
Well, it's been now or never forever.
Yeah, but again, it's now or never because I imagine this is the last time Ireland will have Joe Schmidt as their coach at a World Cup. And the way I was writing about it this week was his coaching resume, the only stain on it is the World Cup, losing in the quarterfinals to Argentina.
Where does he go after this, though? Back to New Zealand?
I don't know.
It's
a whole other debate. Like the IRFU would try to keep him again, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
I'd say that would be a conversation somewhere along the road. But just the fact that he... just if you look at just the history of his ability, his coaching, going back to Bay of Plenty, Blues, Blues wasn't that good, into Claremont, winning their only championship, all the way up to success. So the World Cup is the one box, and it's the one thing that no Irish coach has ever been able to do, no matter, even the great teams that Eddie had and the Grand Slam team that Decky had, when the World Cup's rolled around, we just couldn't get it right.
Yeah. On that note, Gav, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with live Premier League action all this month on the Air Sport Pack.